What is the maximum number of programmers you can put on a project team? I don't know, how many can you get? Hi guys, it's Daniel Markin with another week of Nerd Roundup. If you've never been to a Nerd Roundup before, Nerd Roundup is a weekly discussion of the tech news of the week from tech people, with an emphasis to kicking back and having fun. I believe a team that can joke together and have fun together can do about damn near anything, and I do my best I can to find people from all sorts of different viewpoints to do that. Now, today we have Mark Danziger, old James, what's his name, and John Kern. Hey guys, how's it going?
Howdy-ho, Dan.
So far.
So I'm going to set this thing up. We're going to do something a little different than we normally do. Normally I ask folks what they've been doing over the past week. Come back, James. Come back. We ask people what they've been doing over the past week. But today I am going to sort of set up a discussion around the first two or three articles we've been talking about earlier. And these are articles about the Ukrainian war. If you're watching from the distant future, say next week or so, the Ukrainian war was an act of aggression of Russia against the Ukrainian nation. It's a very, very bad thing. But technology has been involved all throughout this thing, the buildup, the actual war itself. And it seems like technology is getting involved in every dang thing. So the first three articles, I will just give the headlines and I'll come back for talking, is commercial spy satellites put Russia's Ukraine invasion in the public eye. SpaceX sends a bunch of Starlink terminals to people in Ukraine. And as the tanks rolled into Ukraine, so did malware. So Microsoft enters the war. I just posted a link in the NerdHerd Talk channel that Anonymous claims to have taken down the Russian space agency, which is can now not control their satellites. So guys, what the living hell is going on here? I mean, geez. I don't want to get into discussion over whether Russia's good or bad, and I really don't want to get into discussion over, you know, this particular event. We can certainly talk about that, but what I'm really interested in talking about is, let me clear this here.
You want to be on point on these articles?
So, say it again, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. You froze. We lost you for about the last 40 seconds.
So I was shared several articles about technology in the Ukraine situation. There is a breaking article that Anonymous has taken down the Russian space agency, and they can no longer control their satellites. So I'm a tech guy. We all are tech guys. We came up during the rise of computers. We've seen public discussion go from, you know, nothing to being a second-by-second part of our lives. I'm okay with talking about Ukraine and Putin and all that stuff, but I would like to generate something of value 20 years from now. So I want to talk about how we got here, where we think we're going to go from here. The fourth article is, let me see, where's this? Experts say that soon almost the entire internet will be generated by AI. So obviously, obviously the computer's not our record player. Okay, it doesn't show us movies or send us newspapers in the mail. The computer is an extension of our brain. It provides us sensory information. We put output to it. It's expanding its ability to stretch our brain and integrate with our brain. We're also getting very good at generating things that aren't true. You know, how do we get here? Mark, have you been, I'm sure you've been following along with what's happening, right?
Yeah. So let's talk for a minute about the metaverse, because I think that's really, you know, the good shorthand term for what it is, no matter how much Facebook has tried to make it a brand. And the metaverse comes from a classic science fiction book called Snow Crash, right? In which basically most nation states have collapsed. There's a couple random assassins wandering around with nuclear weapons in the sidecars of their motorcycles. And most people spend most of their time plugged into a three-dimensional, consensual, I'll use the word hallucination, of what the world really looks like. And, you know, in this book, the bad guy is sort of an American who has kind of unearthed a piece of malware that will reprogram people's brains. that he can insert into their brains through the metaverse. And he intends to use this to control people all over the world. That's the story. And to a certain extent, it's a dystopian book. It's not a happy-making book. Like, people aren't this is not a book that where people are like super enthused about living in this world.
Doesn't sound like a very happy
part, yeah. Mark.
Not a doesn't sound like a musical or a dance along.
Just wanted to be real clear, right? This is not perceived as a good thing. And I think that it is concerning to me because we've adopted this sort of general era of what I call kind of passivity. Back in the yonder days, I had a blog. And in my blog, I talk smack about pornography because I don't think it's a good idea. And a guy who had a blog about pornography responded to me. I had actually a very constructive back and forth about it. And one of the points that I made that sort of I realized is that people who are getting increasingly attached to watching sports and not doing them, right? We don't go to the park and play basketball. We sit back and eat chips and watch the NBA. We don't get involved in mountain climbing. We watch Free Solo, right? We have a very small number of people who are like living and participating in the real world, and the rest of us participate increasingly vicariously. And part of the reason is I'm, an old guy and I'm not super fit and I can't free climb El Capitan the way, he did. So obviously whatever I do is going to be inadequate by comparison. So therefore I should watch it and not try and go do it. And I think that's horrible.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's the worst thing I can possibly imagine.
Yes, I agree.
And I think that increasingly as we move out and try and move our interactions into this virtual space, and I've got some friends who are working with Facebook or Meta or whatever it is, on the software to allow all of us to have realistic avatars whose gestures and expressions are controlled by what we do in front of a camera. It's terrible. Like, I think it's a really bad thing.
So I agree with you. I think part of this.
I'm going to back and close it, and I'll tie it off and hand it over. And the reason for that is actually coming to light as we talk about the Ukraine. Because at some fundamental level, reality matters. And as much as we try and detach ourselves from it and live in a world of imagination, at some point, the world of reality and the people who still live there are going to come and bite it and bite us. So that's my rant.
A pretty good rant. I would like to draw, I put another bow around your bow. I think part of the problem we have, and I want to bring us back to programming because this is related to tech very directly. Part of the problem we have in programming is abstractions. And, I can't, if I ask you, hey, where's a good restaurant for us to eat at? There's a very complex thing going on in your brain. You're thinking about food types, cuisine, location, cost, and you're doing some work, some mental work, to come up with that recommendation. You may actually come up with a different one next week, and that process of evolving is a very useful thing. If we abstract that conversation out to just, hey, Yelp, tell me the top-rated restaurant near me, then we take away the underlying work that other person and us are doing back and forth in conversation and exchanging value statements and all that stuff, and reducing that transaction to just, and I'll say transaction, even that's itself abstracting, reducing that whole thing into, boom, here's a couple words, here's the top-rated thing, we'll move on. And that's the way we've begun to think about, like, every damn thing. Like, is Putin good or bad? Are the Ukrainians right or wrong? Everything we can think of, is Daniel a Nazi? It's all, we abstract out to some level to work through it. And I'm okay with using abstractions. I'm fine with that. I know we have to deal in stereotypes, tell stories, and work with each other. But we can't use abstractions and stereotypes to replace every damn thing in our life. That's not going to work. That is a bad, bad path to be heading down.
Funny, I was just reading a book probably written 20 years ago by a guy who spent 30 years in the New York public school system. And he was a teacher.
Finally graduated.
Learned to read right, finally.
Good one. He was a teacher, though. Yeah, so, but He was talking about colonial Massachusetts. So it might seem like a long way from Ukraine, but interesting point about, at least from his perspective, the small community that formed back then. You know, he rattled off Dedham and Sudbury, a couple of Massachusetts towns that I know of, having early on actual exclusivity in terms of, if we don't like you, if you don't comport with our philosophies and kind of our way of life, we'll kind of just make you unwelcome here.
Yes. Send you out to the wilderness.
Yeah. So in other words, local control, you know, was kind of a way that they could have their culture.
But yet they could travel town to town. Like you could get up and go to the next town and visit and come back.
Exactly. And so you could, yeah. And so the collectively, there was a government above that, which was, you know, tolerated. But kind of there was actually some self-correcting. If the town or the parish or, you know, people would vote with their feet. And if they didn't like it, they would leave. They would go do something else. But it's interesting in that, as we've ratcheted forward from that sort of local control and, yeah, I mean, being somewhat, you know, today you would say politically incorrect, not including everybody, yet they achieved remarkable things, remarkable innovation, remarkable, like all kinds of stuff back, you know, for a couple hundred years. And we instead, I'll wrap this up shortly, but we have moved towards cookie cutter, treating everything the same, trying to, you know, how can there be a global position on something, except for GPS satellites, not that kind of global, but, you know, that whole ruse of caring, you know, like people care about local versus trying to have a global decision how everyone should live.
It's
the global want that, but real people don't.
It's interesting that even our categorization of categorizations is kind of an issue. You just brought up the geographic location and how people agreed or you're expelled from the community. If you look on the left-hand side, since Mark is kind of new to Discord here, in this room, in my Discord server, I've got general programming funny, duck clips, programming serious, and history archaeology. I've also got family, politics, and nerd herd talk. You might think that these are actually tagged channels for different sorts of content, and they are, but they're not. That's not really true. I mean, what they're really about is general is a channel where I think most of the abstractions and words we can use will not be at issue with anybody, and so I don't expect any argument at all in general. And duck clips sort of okay. You can watch a video with some jokes and not get too upset. And so each channel really is sort of a group of things that we can agree to, and some things we're not going to discuss because we're not going to agree. And that makes for a healthy environment. Whereas if I just had to like throw everything into the wind with tags or maybe folders or whatever, it's never ever going to work because every little person is going to be part of every damn conversation, and that just does not scale.
Yeah, that was, I think, his whole point about these towns. It was kind of a fascinating thing that sort of self-selected because it doesn't scale. You can't put everybody in the same box. Yet, to his point, that's what our education system tries to do.
I think geography has added sort of a confounder in there that it happened over history, mostly through geography. But really, it's just different little groups of people, and geography just is the limiting factor physically for a lot of these little groups. We have a lot of instances of people who existed in multiple social groups and were successful in all of them.
But I think one of the things, and I think it ties to what you're both talking about. I live in LA, and I've done a fair amount of work in the entertainment space in technology. And there's a phrase in technology called high concept. And those are movies where you can basically explain the movie. It's Die Hard on an airplane. It's something in a something, right? And you immediately get you built the whole movie, right? The rest of it is just the mechanics of blocking and tackling. And the difference between something like that, whether it's a novel or a movie or a computer program or an organization or politics, and art or something really meaningful is that, you know, a novel, like a good artistic novel, is open-ended and complex and unexpected and somewhat emergent. And when we build kind of high concept politics or even high concept software or high concept organizations, we're quashing all of that because it has to fit into the box that we built for it, or else it's no good.
And not only that, but I think when I first came, I'm still kind of rusty as far as it goes to public presentations and talking. My speech isn't great. But when I first got online, I was even worse. And there's a lot of reasons why, but one of the reasons was I had been exposed to the 60s, 70s, and 80s TV commercials, you know, Dick Cavett and Larry King and all this stuff. And I was naturally mimicking those people when I got online thinking that I was... You naturally mimic the people you consume, the media you consume. So we have like a million little, you know, people who are all trying to reproduce the type of thing they see on CNN. And that's really, really not a mixture for a very productive conversation.
A Starlink terminal.
Yeah, I wonder if he can get.
He's back.
You guys just carry. I think it's working great. Just carry on, and I'll come join back in when I come back.
You look like you're being brilliant. Your audio is cutting in and out.
Yeah, you guys are awesome. I think that last thing that John said was spot on. Whatever it was,
It boils down to people like me. Low stress. People enjoy a low stress environment. You know, and if you're with people that are like you, that's easier.
Yes.
Yeah. So fascinating about these actual groups, actually clashed tremendously because I don't know if they were like Quakers. How they weren't. They were Congregationalists, but similar in that. There was no leadership. There was no person saying, I shall do all this. No, each one of you had to contribute, which actually made for clashes and a much more robust community. So it was fascinating that they weren't following like sheep, you know, one person, one.
You know, was there a common value system there, though?
Yes.
That's the whole
common values and not agreement on all issues. I'm not saying that, but if you're approaching problems from the same, you know, kind of general perspective, that's going to be, easier to handle.
So it's like making your own coloring book. Each community is they make their picture of the coloring book, and then members inside are free to color inside that picture. And there's a whole bunch of pages of different colors, that drawings that you can color inside. And they all may have strict rules, don't color outside the lines, but each picture comes together differently.
And it reminds me of a VP or a co-owner telling me, when I asked him about why, you know, his company seemed pretty awesome, what's some of your secrets? And he said, well, a lot of it is we try to hire for culture. So that's what these small communities did. They brought, you know, had people that shared with a shared culture so that a lot of you didn't have that friction and, you know.
There's some respect between the people involved.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a big fan of the History Channel or the History Forum on Reddit, which has got millions of members, and they do a great job of explaining historical things. They have a very small number of negatives. Don't do this. And by enforcing those negatives, you know, pretty seriously, they managed to have this great, great community. And one of it is, don't bring up something that's happened in the last 20 years. Don't write a high top-level comment that you're not able to back up with books that you've not actually taught yourself. You know, it doesn't take a lot of bounds to create an area where you can do some really cool stuff. I think the problem is everybody thinks that they're, you know, a freaking engineer, and everybody wants their own set of 4,000 rules instead of maybe the 10 or 20 you need to actually have a functioning community.
Yeah, like the Ten Commandments worked pretty good for a while.
Yeah, I bring you these 10 commandments.
Oh,
Well, there, it leaves room for interpretation, certainly, when there's 10. And I guess what we need as humans is some interpretation.
Yeah, and I think that's the reason for having a smaller number of negatives, because if you have a small list of rules, then you immediately begin discussion of what does it exactly mean to kill? Is it okay to kill in war or whatever? Whereas if you have this overwhelming list of stuff you're not supposed to do, you become a...
So we have this really kind of awesome, what would I say, academic priest that would speak at our church from time to time. And he knows Greek and he knows Latin and he knows... So he's saying, you know, do not, in Hebrew, and, you know, thou shalt not kill isn't a very good translation of that.
Ooh.
And if it was a more accurate translation, it's thou shalt not murder.
Yeah.
You know, so self-defense, you can, you know, defend yourself, or there's some bad people over there that are trying to kill the people in Ukraine. Maybe there's something to do to them, right? You know, so it's not, killing is not allowed. It's situational, and something got lost in the translation. For us English speakers, anyway.
I'm really having a kind of a cri de coeur here over Nerd Roundup in general, and I want to keep doing it. I love it. It's fun. But it seems like as we go week by week, we're getting a lot more stories about security breaks, hostage taking, ransomware, you know, technology and war. It's, you know, it's turned, in my lifetime, it's turned from Frogger and Donkey Kong to, like, holy hell, you know, the Russians are using commercial satellite imagery to bomb Ukrainians or whatever. It's we've gone past the point where, as a nerd society, as a bunch of programmers, we can say, oh, we just create the tools. We're not responsible. No, no, we're actually responsible for part of this stuff here.
There's some shared values missing in our community.
Well, I think if I can coin a fairly famous phrase, you know, why do I rob banks? Because that's where the money is. And, you know, 40 years ago, the technology that actually controlled stuff and money was relatively unavailable to the average person. Like, I couldn't physically go into a bank and get to a terminal to transfer money into my account, right? And that's what it would have taken. I would have had to physically get into the building and get to the terminal and unlock the room, unlock the terminal and transfer money. Today, basically, it's all just kind of floating around out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, a decent percentage of people are people who do bad things, right? A decent percentage of people will steal your wallet if you leave it on top of your car. And a decent percentage will give it back, right? But there's enough people out there who have access to these tools that, you know, they're going to use them. One of the things that has frustrated me, not endlessly, but a whole ton for a long time. I'm kind of, you know, the archetype, and I think you guys to a large extent are, of, you know, we're kind of libertarian-ish, libertarian, kind of good in the world, kind of come out of the whole Earth catalog, that whole kind of crunchy, kind of self-sustaining, upper middle class model of what the world ought to be. And, you know, we forget that, you know, a lot of the world is not great neighborhoods, and that where people live in constant anxiety and fear, and that we forget that the behaviors that work really well in one place, right, work really badly in the other. As we brought those places together, right, the values that we brought here have been stupid and destructive.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like I've been lied to. I really kind of feel angry because, you know, during the 80s and 90s, we were, I don't want to say utopian or Pollyannish, but we were really happy and enthused about all this really cool stuff that was going to happen as we transferred information back and forth and enabled people to act instantaneously. And it just did not happen that way. I describe the net to people, you know, there are a billion people right now who don't have running water but have a cell phone with high-speed internet, who would happily take your $10 if they could get you some way of getting you out of it.
Yeah. And so the issue becomes, you know, if you think about it, you know, life in cities in Dickens' time was, you know, dangerous, dirty, and complex. You know, I'm a gun guy, right? I've been shooting as a hobby for a long time. And it's fascinating to me to look at the sort of gentlemen's weapons and even gentlewoman's weapons that were sold in like the late 19th century at, you know, things that you would expect to carry around in town because likely you would want to use it at some point.
Yeah, a nice, pretty Derringer for the
right, lady. Right, exactly. Yeah. You know, and it's one of these things where, you know, you then kind of reconstruct, well, what was life actually like that this was something that was commercially valuable enough to make and sell?
Something
and
we talked
forget, I think, that, you know, I live in this super nice, safe suburb, and, you know, the big news here is that somebody stole a catalytic converter off a car, and somebody stole a concrete lion off someone's porch, you know, and these are the kind of dramas that my neighborhood has, right? Most people in the world have never lived like this. Most people today in the world don't live like this. We assumed this was the normal baseline. It's not. It's an aberration.
So Mark, I know you may drop out at any moment. I want to kind of tell you where I think this is generally going. We brought this up last week. You know, I am interested in a set of morals, or maybe ethics might be a better word, for internet usage. And I don't really have any ideas or answers. I can give you an example. I don't believe that my internet conversation should ever be about whether somebody is good or not. You know, I see a lot of internet conversations on Twitter and social media. Well, such and such is a bad person because they cheated on their taxes, or, you know, whatever. Insert list of things here. And I refuse to be part of any discussion that's about the value of another human being as if they were a slab of meat. That to me is an easy, negative, kind of Ten Commandment-y answer to that. I feel like we need a new set of morals for online. Otherwise, we're just going to be clashing together endlessly.
Well, I think it's three things. I think we need media literacy to understand how to do things online. Like, I would absolutely support the idea of creating a foundational media literacy curriculum and teaching it in schools all over America, so that kids would learn to understand this flood of stuff that comes to them and learn to manage it better, kind of in their own heads.
Yeah, learn to learn.
Dude, we need to talk CRT. Yeah.
Critical thinking.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we need to talk CRT here, because the thing is, to do that critical thinking, you have to start with kids with some sort of overall view of what this thing is, so that you can dive down. If you start with this overall view of America is this great democracy, it supports blah, 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 then you can go down to here's all the fucked up things we did. If you start with a bad view of whatever the subject is, there's no room to explain all these things later on. So when you talk about critical thinking, critical reading, you have to say, look, the internet is a wonderful place that you can exchange information. However, there's all of these things that will trip you up down here. It's also a place where people are trying to, and you can insert the negatives downstream, but we have to agree as a society on what that high-level slug line, the high-concept thing is going to be for media consumption, because we don't know that yet.
Yeah, no, we do. And I think...
We do.
That has, you know, I'm a 68er, right? I was a hippie anti-war protester. You know, my friends lived in communes. I built domes for them. You know, we did all the commune type stuff, right? And we were gonna, like, you know, break the system. And honestly, I kind of have come to value the system real highly, and I think that people of my cohort were largely wrong. Right? We were playing for the wrong team. And I think that at some level, you know, we need to come up with a set of relatively common, inclusive, valuable, shared perceptions of the world so that we all understand that kind of we're in this together. Because your whole thing about that person's a bad person is the desire to send somebody off to Coventry and sort of, you know, get them out of civilized life. And like, no, they're like my neighbor. Like, we live together. We see each other at Ralph's. Like, I don't want them to go to Coventry. They believe one thing, I believe another. So what?
Somebody asked on the IDW room on Rep the other day, could you please explain to me what the Russian story is with Ukraine? He says, hear all this stuff on the news. Somebody take the Russian side and explain why they're doing this. And of course, there were a bunch of wonderful answers. You know, the Russian society's very detailed, and they've got a hell of a complex backstory. But, you know, the real answer is because they can. And I say that sort of halfway facetiously. You say because they can, not as a throwaway phrase, but because the reason they're doing this is much more of a chess problem, that there are all these factors that come to play to make it worthwhile at this moment than it is a narrative problem where you're trying to create this narrative of the Soviet Union and how all these things happen. So the more we want to sort of cram everything into this high concept narrative thing, the less we're actually going to understand the forces that come to play in each little minute of current news. I think we try to use narrative far, far too much.
Well, that's easier that way, I think. That's you know, as opposed to going through the, you know, I read something kind of fascinating about, you know, when the wall came down and the Soviet states began to fall apart and Ukraine was instantly the number three most nuclear armed country in the world. And it's like, oh, huh, well, that sucks. So the West, you know, like NATO and Clinton and whatever, like, hey, you know what? I got it. We got your back. Why don't you give us those weapons and we'll protect you? Of course.
It's not working out for a while.
Yeah. And of course, the unlike the Chinese or the Russians, even, we've got the attention span of like a gnat. So like the U.S. is really pretty shitty at foreign, you know, foreign policy, because we just, you know, we got bored with that idea. And different president comes along, and different NATO people come along, and then poor Ukraine is left with nobody actually has their back. And you know, under Obama and company, whatever, Russia took Crimea, and nothing happened. So
I think, you know,
4 years later, they take some other chunk, probably nothing will happen. So, you know, it's hard to put all that into detail and newscast.
Yeah, you think, I think
of the... We're also forgetting Afghanistan, right? So we're supporting that group, and then, boom, one day we're not.
Yeah, I think about the burning of the Reichstag, and I think about Munich and Chamberlain coming back with there's be peace in our time. We think of these things now as part of this overall narrative of the Nazi Party taking power, but, you know, or the Bundaberg, all that. We think of this in terms of the story of the Nazis taking over that, you know, dovetails into another story of World War II. I don't think that's really what happened. I mean, I know we like looking at it that way, but I think each of these events taken at a moment was the culmination of hundreds of different little variables that made sense and may have been the optimal thing to do. The Nazis may have not burned the Reichstag. You know, Chamberlain may have actually made the best dang thing. Chamberlain may have actually made the best choice he could at the time in Munich. We, you know, it's wonderful to think of these stories. You know, I know the Russian story, golly damn, I know that, you know, they went to Afghanistan. Hell, the freaking British were in Afghanistan 150 years ago. And I understand these stories, but you know, if we live in the instant, we don't live in sort of the culmination of some narrative. Whatever we do right now is going to be the result of that's going to be 100 other narratives 100 years from now. We don't know what those are going to be.
But it's not so. So there's a couple of things, right? I mean, the first thing is that people are fundamentally tribal, right? And
yes, it is.
Our noble people, our noble warriors, you know, our priests, they're evil sorcerers, they're evil soldiers, you know, I mean, it's sort of like we always kind of create that kind of reflective thing. But what we forget is that the history of the human race is the history of people who have more power taking things away from people who have less. I always laugh my rear off at the folks who sort of valorize Native Americans, because, like, you know, they have the map of America with all the various Native American tribes on it. And I'm like, yeah, but what year was that? Because that tribe came over and just kicked the hell out of the other tribe to take their stuff, right? And this other tribe migrated from here to there and wiped out these two tribes on the way. And that's the history of every continent that I know of.
Yes.
I don't know a continent that hasn't had a history like that.
There was a question.
Antarctica, probably, but
the penguins. Okay. There was a question the other day about,
you know, so Something's different now, though, because you can actually create wealth without taking it from somebody else. In our current world, that's possible, right? It's different, you know, with the Industrial Revolution and such. Now, there's a creation of wealth that doesn't mean just taking it from somebody else.
But there's
at least to a scale, a huge scale.
So there's this question the other day about why the settlers actually took over North America. You know, were they violent? Was there genocide? You know, what happened with North America? And a historian answered with, well, you know, that's the old, you know, cultural extinction theory, where a higher level culture meets a lower level one, and the higher level one wipes them out. And he strawmanned the argument to be that there's some cultures better than others that automatically take over the lesser one. That's the dumbass version of that argument. The better argument there, as far as Native Americans and all that, is that a highly technical civilization has all these morals, has all these ways of interacting amongst themselves that allow them to be more highly advanced, that a lesser civilization does not have those things. And you just can't mix those things. And I think that's true probably of internet groups as well. There's no way you're going to take a highly functioning social group online and, you know, take a hammer and bang it into, you know, RuPaul's latest, you know, fashion show or whatever. These things will never, ever mingle in some sort of friendly way. It's just, it's impossible. This is the culture clash problem, like, online. It's not just money, and it's not just, you know, violence, is my point.
Well, I think the thing online is that we have two things. We have a freedom from consequence online, right? I mean, I have a couple of friends who've actually been swatted, right? Which is probably the most meaningful consequence I can think of.
Would you explain?
I know a couple of people who've actually been, you know, lost their jobs because they've been canceled.
Would you explain swatted, please?
On the left and on the right, amusingly, both.
Mark, explain swatted. What is swatted?
Swatting is where somebody spoofs a 9/11 call and basically says, I live down the street from Daniel Markham and his wife, and Daniel just shot one of his kids, and he's yelling out the window he's going to shoot his wife. So what winds up happening is the police tend to take those calls kind of seriously, and they roll on them pretty hard. Yeah. And what you get, as my friend did, is a pounding on the door. My friend happened to be on the phone at 1 in the morning and up in his home, right? And walked to the door, opens his door, and there are a bunch of officers Kevlar'd up with ARs pointed at him, and he's like, tell me what you want me to do, right? He's a together enough guy that he functioned that way, right? Nobody, to my knowledge, has actually been killed in a swatting raid yet, but people have come pretty darn close.
Do they then go after whoever made the damn phone call?
Sometimes they do, but it's very difficult, because in modern telephony, right, I can set up a series of relay calls, and it's very, very hard to trace back.
Yes. And once again, Anonymous just claimed to have taken over the Russian space agency. You know, we're not talking about even the level of swatting your friend. We're talking about a bunch of guys in their basement somewhere, metaphorically, taking over a freaking space agency, right? This ain't Donkey Kong anymore, right?
This is that vulnerability, right? This is behaviorally what we've got is we have a set of behaviors that feel consequence-free.
Yes.
Right? I mean, I get to be mean to somebody online, and I go home and I snicker about it, right? That's what people do, I guess, I hope. But now what's going to happen is what we're seeing is the intersection of the real world and this virtual world in some really novel and frightening ways. Because I got to believe that if I'm a hacker sitting in Hungary someplace, or sitting in Czechoslovakia or in England, and I'm sort of fat, dumb, and happy, and I did this, that there's some Russian company that's trying to sort out who I am,
yeah,
and that the people knocking at my door are not going to be friendly SWAT cops who stand down when they realize I didn't take a shot at my wife.
Right.
I want to add to this, because I think you're onto something, Mark. What we're finding, like I said, week to week, it's the same kind of story week to week. I hate to say this, but I'm reaching the conclusion that we're in a constant state of warfare. This is not playing around. This isn't, you know, Jimbo doesn't like Uncle Trump's jokes or whatever. We are in a state of warfare that we refuse to acknowledge. You know, one of my friends 10 years ago said, you pluck up a server on a VPS somewhere, you turn a server on without putting any locks around, he said within about 5 minutes, it's being attacked by somebody or another. And that was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, well,
there's two things to think about. One is the state of software security and architecture is utter crap. right? We have taken tools which were fundamentally designed originally for sort of secure messaging, but as they become pervasive for having a bunch of old guys chat online and see video of each other. And we've given control of key elements of our infrastructure to those tools. And I'm sorry, but what's good enough for, you know, for this isn't good enough for that. It's not, wasn't good enough for Boeing's flight control system on the 37 MAX. The level of software craft and the level of hardening, and this is fundamentally a business decision, right? Boeing made a decision to outsource development of that flight control software to India. I shared that up because that yes. sort of sums up one of my points earlier okay. about it. But to outsource that flight control software to India, that it directly led to that plane, those planes crashing and those people dying. It was a business decision yes. that the people buying software make because they don't know any better. And at some point, they have to learn.
Did you hear about the United Kingdom story last week with the software? Oh, fine. Okay, so United Kingdom is launching an investigation because software they installed in their post offices was unable to add and subtract correctly at all times to tell whether or not the till was valid. This has been going on for about 15 years. Hundreds of people have lost their job. People have gone to jail because the stupid freaking software can't tell how much money is supposed to be in the till. One guy said, I was my first day using the till. My supervisor stood beside me the entire day. The software said I stole, and I went to jail. So, I mean, the 737 MAX, you know, we're entering some freaking really serious times where people can kill people inadvertently, people can send people to jail inadvertently, and just think of what they could do if they really wanted to.
Yeah.
We're already seeing it.
Yeah, we are, yes.
Yeah, there's plenty of weaponizing of law enforcement agencies. Used to be in the bad countries. Yeah, I'm not so sure it's not here.
I've had friends contact me behind the scenes saying, hey, look, we're thinking about doing something against Russia in a cyber attack kind of way. And I like, God bless you guys, not me, but, you know, every little guy with a computer terminal now is his own little Putin or Hitler or whoever, right? Or Roosevelt.
Well, have you folks ever read John Robb? You know who John Robb is?
No.
Is that the Robb Report guy?
Strategist and a writer. And I started reading him when one of my kids was in Afghanistan. And basically, he was a very smart writer about the idea of network warfare. And I've been following him ever since. He's got a Patreon that's actually one of the ones worth reading. And I'll actually send over a PDF of his latest. And what he's basically saying is that we have an open source swarm attacking a nuclear power
yes,
right now, at this
do.
Minute.
We do.
Right? Yeah. You saw the photo of people lined up in the subway station because Google and Apple Pay doesn't work anymore, and that's how people pay for their Russia subway tickets in Russia?
Yeah, Putin,
right? They
yeah.
turned it off.
Russia pissing
so
off.
Apparently there's a photo of a subway station in Moscow where people are just backed up the stairs because they can't tap their phones and pay for their tickets anymore.
Oh, because somebody hacked it?
No, because Google and Apple turned off Google Pay and Apple Pay in Russia.
Yeah, if you want me to say something controversial, I'll say something. This is controversial.
That's
pissing off 100 million people online that Russia has just done is a far, far more dangerous thing than actually sending their army into Ukraine. And I hate to say that, but it is. It could end up with a lot more people killed.
Yeah, because what's going to happen is, and Robb goes through this whole discussion kind of very thoughtfully about we carefully calibrate military responses between yes. nuclear powers,
yes.
right, to carefully signal what our limits are and what we will and what we won't do,
yeah.
right? All these idiots and random actors going out in the world today, do you know that they shut down the service manuals for maintaining GE and Rolls-Royce jet engines in Russia? Their digital online all service manuals are online. There's no paper manual anymore. They turned them off.
Yeah, this is bad. This
yeah.
is bad.
Yeah.
This is you know, from a national standpoint, prestige standpoint, the Russians have committed to doing whatever God knows they want to do here using military violence. And they're kind of stuck now. They got to do whatever they're going to do, they got to do. And we're just going to, the worse this looks, the other million people online are just going to keep escalating in random ways. There was an attack on one of the oligarchs' yachts last week. Somebody tried to blow a yacht up.
Not just random either. You know, some of these big things like Apple and Google, I think, were asked by the government to do that.
Oh, yeah.
They'll do whatever the government asks. They don't give a shit.
Right. It's exactly right.
They got no morals.
That's right. And if they will do it
but
to something...
But I got
to
tell you, you know, it's relatively scary because what we would like not to have happen is to have Putin nuke anybody.
Exactly.
Right? I consider that a highly desirable outcome.
Yes.
Yeah, and hearing that their Anonymous is in charge of the space agency doesn't... I don't know enough about it, but that also gives me pause. Like, oh, that's really awesome. Oh, wait, what do they know about? Wait, are they going to start falling? Or are they going to?
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know what that means.
In one way, maybe it means it cuts off their aerial intel that they might be getting from the Russians that won't get that aerial intel.
Yeah, we can dream up good things it might mean, but yes. I can also dream up.
Yes.
They might run into each other. They might crash. They might fall to Earth. They might, I don't know what.
And welcome to the 1990s. We can dream up good things that might happen.
You can imagine things that aren't realistic, too, like that. I mean, it's orbits are kind of stable, and how much they have to be tweaked to keep those things in the air, I don't know.
But what you can think about is that the Russians probably have satellites like we do that are watching our launch sites. And that they have a very exact awareness of what the state of all of our launch sites and all our launch readiness is at any given moment. And that if that's been cut off, how much more nervous are they?
And we're actually part of
it. Are they going to get nervous enough to stop doing what they're doing?
Yeah, guys, look, we are part of the problem, okay? This is my point coming into this conversation. That's why I said I want to talk meta level. Because getting online and telling the story how fucked up Putin and Russians are, which God knows I'm with you, just at best is nothing. Maybe nobody listens. That's probably the best result of that. At worst, some other asshole hacks into some other space agency. To Mark's point, it used to be if you had a military action, it was dialed in weeks ahead of time. Diplomats talked to other diplomats. Even with the invasion of Poland, Hitler went to Russia first and said, hey, look, we want to split Poland up. We actually this time shared our intel with the world and said, look, they're going to attack Ukraine. Here's our pictures. Here's what you can see. And it didn't make a difference as far as escalation. But the impact really, it wasn't on the Russians. It's on all the people watching day by day, the little satellite pictures and the little nerd roundup guys and all that stuff. It is entertainment, to Mark's point. We're removed from this. We're talking at the meta level, the categorical level. And that is not very happy, not a very good thing to be if you're in charge of the space agency or you're some guy on the ground in Ukraine or whatever. That's not helpful to those folks.
No, it's going to be sporty. And I think the question of the thing that scares me or that alarms me, we have a tech universe, right? That we have a proto metaverse today where we all live online. And there are behavioral norms in that, which are, I think, not positive behavioral norms. And there's the law around that is murky, unclear, and ill-enforced, right, today. That's increasingly intersecting the real world in ways that are impactful on all of us. And as a result, the sort of relatively orderly real world that exists outside my window here, right, is increasingly at risk from, you know, attacks or exploits or actions in the virtual world.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons I have not talked about Ukraine online is the fact that being a former Marine, I understand this shit's pretty fucking deadly. We're not talking about this isn't what happened to the Dallas Cowboy, you know, last week on the Super Bowl,
no,
or whatever.
This is...
Yeah, great point.
I mean, you guys want to go out for a beer, fine.
Every one of these is somebody who is killed serving with my son in Afghanistan. Right? Every one of these is a real person with a family and parents that I probably talk to, you know, and a widow and sometimes kids.
Wow.
And that's what we're talking about when we talk about this.
I support going into Afghanistan. I supported going into Iraq. The reason why is not because I thought we could, you know, give them democracy or whatever else. Is because as a nation, I supported use of massive weapons that would kill maybe millions of people in those countries. They deserved a chance to at least go out and vote for whoever the hell they wanted to run the damn thing before we did that. And that was worth risking and losing American lives, simply on my own standpoint, from a moral standpoint. Not to take over the country, not to make them better. You guys vote. Do what you want to do, because we're not going to come back again and die. We're going to come back again and kill y'all. And that's, you know, that's a horrible thing. It's a horrible calculus to have to come up with. I've never really shared it online because I'm very, very uncomfortable with that. But I you know, the thing is that you have to, when you make these hard decisions, you have to give people a shot. It's sort of, you know, saying what they want. And if the internet is poisoning that social discussion, whether it's here or overseas, you lose the ability as a citizen of a free country to make perhaps a moral or good judgment around what the country should be doing about damn near anything. We're blind in a lot of ways.
I think that we as a country.
I'm going to buy a banjo, and I'm going to sing songs during these brief intermissions.
But I think at the end of the day, you know, we need to start figuring out kind of how to collectively define and manage our interests.
Yes.
And I use the word collectively because that's, I think, where we're really bad.
Yes.
You know, I watched the State of the Union last night, and, you know, I'm not going to take a stand, you know, on Biden or Trump or any of the politicians lately, except I don't like many of them. But I was super hopeful in Biden kind of really trying to kind of pull the room together. Didn't see it so much because he had to do some stuff to sort of, you know, sustain his base. But, you know, I felt like there were a couple moments where there was a little bit of unity and alignment. I'd like to see more of them. I think that we should basically be firing our leaders until we come up with leaders who are prepared to work together. I think that, you know, that's the game.
I have an excellent book for you guys. I strongly, strongly recommend it. It's called Fears of a Setting Sun. And the premise of the book is that sometimes we used to deify the Founding Fathers. We talk about the Constitution and all this. But in fact, the Founding Fathers just kind of hacked it together best they could. And as they got older, they all thought, oh, man, this thing's really messed up. We're going to have a lot of problems. And they viewed it as an experiment that was bound to go wrong at some point in time. So Fears of a Setting Sun, highly recommended. And now over to you. And now weather. It's going to be fair today, grossly unfair tomorrow. Rain all day.
I would love it. Everyone is taught the uniqueness of this American experiment in the history of mankind. It's a blip. It's a freaking tiny speck of amazing freedom and individual liberty compared to the mayhem that has been. You were just describing it around all the continents and all the, you know, it's always attacking and power. And, you know, oppression and except for this American experiment, which isn't perfect, but goddamn those 53.
But
reality grades aren't perfect. And, you know, the brilliant thing about the American experiment, and to me, it's something I try and look at in organizations to see how you can fraction it down. I had a couple great professors in college who taught all this stuff. And one of them made the point that the beauty of the American experiment is that it's open. Right. If I lived in France, I was married to a French woman for a while. Right. I would never, if I had stayed in France for the last 30 years, I still wouldn't be French. Right. I'd still be the American. Right. My kids might or might not be French. Their kids would probably be French. Right. And we're not a blood or soil kind of country, and we should never be one. And the beauty of America is I've got a neighbor on one side who are immigrants from Iran, neighbor on the other side who are immigrants from Mexico, right? The immigrant from Mexico, you know, who before he passed, always used to make me laugh because he listened to Rush Limbaugh when he was working in his garage every Sunday or whatever day it was on the weekend, right? And I'm like, are you listening to Rush Limbaugh? Like, what the hell, right? You know, it's sort of like all you have to do is buy into the American ideal.
Yeah.
You know, tag you're in. And that's what we want. That's the way you create, I think, dynamic growing organizations.
That's the way
you make your organizations really inclusive.
But yeah, I want to underscore this because I want to make sure everybody caught what Mark said. He said, I view organizations like that too. So what I found that the intersection of my politics and my epistemology, how I understand what's in the world, my ontology, how I group information, and organizational structure, the more those two overlap and stay consistent, the more I'm actually aware of what works and what doesn't work. America was an experiment. It's a wonderful experiment. I love it. It's been doing really well. But there are other experiments. And so we have to grow up and stop saying America's great and these guys suck or America sucks and these guys are great. It's much better to say these principles seem to work at scale, to scale 100 people. These principles kind of work at scale at groups of groups. That's where the real coolness lies in the stuff that we do every day. We can sort of extrapolate from hundreds of examples to make new experiments.
True.
If you look around the world, it seems like a lot of the places that do the best are places that came through the England history, through the England history, right? United States, Canada, Australia. A lot of the other parts of the world, you know, there's a lot more dictators and corruption associated with them than there are associated with the societies that have that English ancestry.
I agree with that. It's an odd situation. I was listening to the story of witches.
I don't think it's just ancestry, because I mean, I'd include India in that. Yeah, I think India is a massively successful country.
India is interesting as hell.
I would include it because the British there had a big influence on there. They were probably, of course, in a minimal culture to start with, but Hong Kong, India, you go to these places around the world where, you know, freedom was what people were going for.
Yeah, I'm a fan of being
I was just going to say a funny quote that a guide that we had in India said, jokingly, but maybe only half. He goes, yeah, the Brits, they left us with the common language and took the wealth. When they left, like the Commonwealth of it, you know. Yeah. Kind of a good one.
Yeah. Indian independence is probably an area I would be willing to take a week or so and dive on. It's they have thousands of years of culture. They have a lot of different conquerors in different areas. They had the British coming in, and they struggled under the British. And they're coming to Mark's point. They're coming along pretty good now. But it was even a struggle once the British left. It wasn't just magic. You know, we're all free now. They're having a hard time still.
Yeah, and it's pretty crazy. I mean, unlike the United States, where you could speak to somebody in another state, in India, except if it weren't for the common language, like, you know, I have friends who, their spouse, they can't speak each other's native tongue. It's kind of
fascinating. That's what kind of kept them in the Anglosphere is the fact that English is the lingua franca, you know, in India. And if I'm you know, from the South and I speak English, I can deal with somebody who's from the North, right, who speaks a completely different language, but we both speak English.
Yeah. And just to keep this appropriately abstract, this is not English because it's English. This is not white people because white people are special. This isn't freedom because we're doing freedom like the Americans did. These are principles that are inalienable. That it doesn't matter what your color is, how short you are, or whatever, a freer society is a more prosperous and happier society, no matter what,
Right? I mean, some of us are agilists anyway. I'm an agilist. And the whole point of agile is to bring levels of freedom into organizations, right? I want people to have levels of freedom and autonomy.
That's what I thought. I'm not sure everybody believes that about agile, but yeah, to me, it's the perfect analogy to, you know, with a great degree of humility to the, you know, the like Declaration of Independence, like our founding fathers. It's like this crazy accidental group of people
Yes.
that formed some simple little document that unleashed the masses to a more freer way and more autonomous way to develop and deliver value through software. But yeah, a lot of people in the Azure world are like, don't see it as a freedom. You know, I don't know. They're kind of way too command and control and autocratic.
Yeah, I don't get it. And there's a whole lot of stuff about the Agile community that I'm uncomfortable with. But on a fundamental level, I'm attached to it because of that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, look, evolution works.
The roots were kind of interesting because it was, what do we agree on? Was basically the open-ended question, you know, 21 years ago or whatever that was.
And it was each of these were values that both were important. It wasn't one or the other. It was, these things are important. Usually we have to pick this one over the other, but they're all values. Oh, man. Every time I talk, they go away.
Okay.
We agree.
Okay, guys, so let me do my goodbye thing. We'll come back and do the post-game show for a few minutes, whoever can hang out. Hang on one second here.
You're going to lose me.
Okay.
So, thanks for letting me yammer. It's great seeing you both.
Mark,
yep.
Please come back.
Daniel, let's try and connect soon and just keep catching up.
Your opinion is most valued here.
See you, Mark. Good to see you.
Okay.
Bye.
Well. You have lost yet another hour of your precious time, and we're really happy you came by. This has been an odd kind of nerd roundup because, dang, we didn't do hardly any articles. We didn't do what have you been doing this past week. But I had fun. I had a lot of fun. These are deep topics. Mark is the go-to guy for me when it comes to bringing up stuff that people disagree on, and I'm extremely happy he was here today. I'm Daniel Markham. I will see you on the internet.